Welcome everyone to the first Board of Forestry meeting for 2022. We are live streaming this meeting on YouTube, and to make sure our viewers online can follow along with today's virtual meeting, I'll go over some housekeeping tips to keep us all on track. Everyone participating or presenting, please silence cell phones and limit background noises. Remember to use the mute feature when you are not speaking and disable your video when not presenting or part of the discussion. For the record, we ask all presenters, members of the public, and board members to state their names for those listening online. If you experience any technical issues, don't hesitate to use the chat function on Zoom to connect with our ODF support team in Salem during the meeting. For those joining us online, I'll remind everyone of our general order of operations. After an item is introduced, and I will invite the presenters to begin. For board members, if you have clarifying questions, please use the raise hand function and I'll call on you. Presenters, we will do our best to ask questions one at a time. After a presentation, we will open up the floor for board discussions and additional questions. I would add, you can also just raise your hand as well. And I'll hopefully be able to spot that too. We will continue to offer real-time public testimony under item one, where the public can comment on items on and off the agenda. At the end of the board comments, we will begin our public comment period. Commenters will have 3 minutes to testify. We have two decision items in front of the board today. Item number three, principles and guidance for the 2023-2025 agency request budget development. And number eight, state forest management focus. Live public comment will also be offered for these items. In the general order of operations for decision item, the board will be presented with information with a staff recommendation. The board can ask clarifying questions on the topic before we invite members of the public to provide comments. Board members can ask follow-up questions from the presenters before the board sets forth a motion for discussion and vote. We will use a roundtable approach for the voting process, which seems to work well at our previous meetings. Additionally, members of the public, we ask that if you would like to submit written testimony for this meeting's agenda items and enter it into the record, please send in your comments by January 26th. This will help in the preparation of our board meeting's minutes. Please note, under ORS 192.660, parentheses 2, parentheses F, and 2H, the board will meet in closed executive session starting at 1 p.m. The purpose of this session will be to review and consider information or records that are exempt from disclosure by law and to confer with legal counsel on current litigation or litigation likely to be filed. Representatives of the news media and designated staff are allowed to attend the executive session. This session is otherwise closed to the public. We will take a lunch break before the virtual executive session begins and re-enter the public portion of the meeting at 2 p.m. With that, any questions? Okay, I will perform a roll call to confirm a quorum can be met for today's items. Liz?
Present.
Ag Powell.
Very good, Chair Jim Kelly. Present.
Thank you. Carla Chambers.
Here.
Ben Doimling.
Here.
Chandra Ferrari.
Here.
Joe Justice.
Here.
Brandon McComb.
Here.
And of course, myself, Jim Kelly. I just have to note that this is seems like a historic moment to have a full board of seven. It's been quite a while. Okay, moving on to the consent agenda items. Do I have a motion to accept consent items A through G?
Mr. Chair, I move to adopt the consent agenda as presented.
Do we have a second?
Second.
Okay, I'll do a roll call for the record. Liz?
Here.
This is accepting the consent agenda.
Oh, yes. Okay. So yes, I accept.
All right. Ben Doimling?
Aye.
Shonda Ferrari?
Aye.
Joe Justice?
Aye.
Brenda McComb?
Aye.
Carla Chambers?
Aye.
And myself, I am an aye as well. Okay. Moving on to item one, State Forester and Board Member Comments. Welcoming our State Forester, Cal Mukamoto. To begin with, your opening comments, Cal, over to you.
Well, thank you, Chair Kelly. Good morning. And for the record, my name is Cal Mukamoto, State Forester of ODF. This is my very first board member meeting as the State Forester. And today I'm in the middle of my second month, but a lot of people are saying I'm beginning my second year, depending on your perspective. But this has been a great experience of being Oregon State Forester, and I have been busy. I mean, it's amazing how much broad bandwidth you have to do this job. I have met with people who represent a wide range of stakeholder interests on Oregon forests, and I'll tell you, it's been enlightening. I want to thank the board for your continued support to my onboarding process as State Forester. Your guidance has been invaluable, and I appreciate the consultation and the discussions we've had. I am very happy to welcome Liz. Of course, we're welcoming each other. I've been here just a little bit longer, which means I don't have to come up with jokes now. it's been great onboarding. I mean, starting off with Liz and a complete board. I think 2022 looks good for the Board of Forestry and Oregon Department of Forestry. All right, real quickly, some highlights around the department. State forest lands, nonprofit groups are stepping up to help Oregon State forest lands recover from the devastating fire damage. A grant of nearly $1 million from American Forest will help the department plant more than 2 million seedlings on the Santa Ana State Forest as part of recovery efforts following 2020's Labor Day fires. Another nonprofit, Oregon Parks Forever, donated over $38,000 to help reforest areas of the Tillamook State Forest that were damaged by the 2021 game hog fire. And for full disclosure, I'm actually on the Board of Trustees for Oregon Parks Forever, but that donation was made before I even knew I was going to be State Forester, so no conflict of interest. These generous gifts will help restore these public lands to healthy, resilient, working forests. After over a year of hazard mitigation work following 2020's Labor Day fires, recreation areas on the Santa Ana State Forest are gradually reopening to the public. Several areas have reopened over the past couple of months, and more are slated to reopen throughout 2022. Actually, I got to visit one of those recreational areas, and there's a story to tell there from a fire ecological standpoint. Another standpoint is the social impacts on that community. And I was just really thankful to the North Cascades District for hosting me and taking me out there. And as you likely know, the 2021 fire season hit Eastern Oregon very hard. More than 95% of ODF protected areas that burnt in 2021 were east of the Cascades, and many of those acres from fires within our Klamath Lake District. The largest fire in the United States last year was the Bootleg Fire at 500,000 acres. As soon as these fires were out, the Eastern Oregon area staff transitioned to post-fire recovery work. There is and will continue to be a substantial workload providing technical assistance to landowners who are working to restore their lands. Post-fire recovery work is also underway in Southern Oregon area, along with federally funded fuels mitigation work that aims to reduce the amount of forest fuels around communities and in areas where there is a likelihood of wildfire. Some legislative updates for you. Senate Bill 1602, after a year of design and development, people can now sign up for electronic notifications of helicopter pesticide spraying near their home or water intake location. This expanded functionality was part of Senate Bill 1602 and aims to improve communication among helicopter pesticide sprayers, neighbors, and water users. Once a helicopter pesticide spray plan is entered in our online system, registered users within 1 mile will receive an email or a text letting them know about the proposed 90-day window for the application and another the night before the application. And of course, Oregon is the first state to enact these sort of notifications for helicopter pesticide spray activities. Senate Bill 762, implementation activities are underway throughout ODF. We are continuously filling positions added by the legislature, many of which were part of SB 762. The Rules Advisory Committee supporting the wildfire risk mapping effort is nearing the end of its work, and the department is on track to meet the bill's deadline to deliver a statewide map of wildfire risk by June 30th, 2022. Applications for the Landscape Resiliency grant program are due Friday. The legislature provided $20 million in general funds for these grants. The diverse work group that helped develop the program and project selection criteria over the past few months will also be reviewing applications and providing ODF with recommendations on projects to select for grants. Now, the federal forest restoration program continues growing. Based on recent assessments, 5.6 million acres in Oregon are classified as being at the highest risk of wildfire, and 65% of those are federal land. Supporting the federal partners and addressing these critical restoration needs is why the federal forest restoration program exists. To help address this immense workload, the FFR program will be tripling in size in 2022. Also, Forest Collaborative Grant Awards will be announced soon. These four programs provide strategic investments that support forest collaboratives in the federal forest restoration planning work. I personally volunteered on forest collaboratives, and I think they can do a lot of good in dealing with the issues we face in our federal forests. Incident management team sustainability. You know, before Nancy left, she made sure we completed a multi-year effort to revise the eligibility for police and fire retirement benefits for ODF employees. This undertaking was driven by increased demands on our firefighters, fire line leadership, and those who support our incident management teams as fire seasons continue to increase in complexity and intensity and duration. And then finally getting down to the federal infrastructure bill, the infrastructure investment was signed off by President Biden on November 15th. It happened to be my first day on the job. So I don't know if there's a correlation there, but it just happened to be. However, you know, these areas funded in the infrastructure bill will include wildfire risk reduction, wildfire response, landscape scale restoration, and ecosystem services. Funds must be authorized and appropriate by Congress before federal funds may be expended. Some provisions of this bill are merely authorized, meaning those amounts would need to be appropriated before the program actually receives funding. And so we've been in contact with our partners at the federal, talking to the National Association of State Foresters to keep on top of this, but it's still unclear exactly what funds the state will end up with. We are staying in close contact with everyone and are preparing as necessary to be ready to take these funds and deliver them to the highest benefit for Oregonians. One final thing is today, if you look over the topics that we're dealing with, this will give the board the broad basis for policy and budgetary decisions for this year and into the next biennium. But one of them presents one of the biggest risks for our organization, and that's finding a large fire fix, funding fix. And so with that, we have set up a meeting with Jim Kelly and Carla Chambers, I think later this month. We want to sit down and unveil what we think could be a framework and a pathway to start dealing with this and maybe come up with a legislative concept so we can be ready for next year. So we'll be developing that, and we look forward to meeting with our chair and board member later this month. But finally, you know, I've been looking a little bit ahead and trying to look ahead for 2022. And of course, we have climate change, we have HCPs, we have a lot of big initiatives here. But I want to take one step backwards, and I want to say thanks to Nancy Hirsch. You know, she did such a fine job as state forester. Her leadership have set me up for the best possible platform to be successful. We could not have had a better person in charge of ODF during that transition. We are fortunate to still have Nancy's assistance on the EFCC and other projects within the agency. Thank you, Nancy, for all you do and all you have done. And ODF will be eternally grateful. At least I will be. I know I will be. With that ends my comments. Chair Kelly, I hand it back to you.
Okay. Thank you, Cal. We are so pleased to have you in the driver's seat. Yes, first order of business for me is to welcome our new board member, Liz Akpawa. And we're, I think, thrilled to have somebody with such an impressive resume and so pleased to finally have a full-size board. Someday we may even get to meet each other. That will be the next big thrill. And of course, we can't seem to stop thanking Nancy, but we do that for very good reason. And so again, thanks to you, Nancy, and knowing you, I'm not worried about all of these kudos going to your head. So again, we're really pleased to have you back and able to help us again. The other thing I just thought I would run through quickly is, you know, we talk a lot about climate smart forestry and all of the challenges we have. And just looking at the news and all, I'm reminded of how much good is being done by a lot of different players, both timber operators and owners, as well as some nonprofits. And so I think there's some shout outs that I just want to quickly run through. First on my list is Collins. Collins has had a long history as a responsible steward and producer of FSC lumber. Second, I wanted, I just learned that Weyerhaeuser has committed to becoming fully carbon neutral by 2030. That's pretty impressive and certainly deserves a shout out. Also, I read the stories up in Washington about Port Blakely and what they had done working with the local tribe there and returned 2 miles of waterfront to that tribe on the Puget Sound and with some other negotiations and trading of property. Pretty impressive move. And so congratulations to them. Also, I've been reading about the fact that also on the Washington side that there had been this new acquisition of a long-term company that had been a responsible operator there, SDS. And so this combination of Twin Creeks Timber and Wilkins, Kaiser, and Olson, and the Conservation Fund have come together. And it looks like we're going to have a pretty impressive stewardship going forward there. And then finally, I don't know if anybody else has seen it. I think the article was originally in the Oregonian, but in the New York Times today is an article about what we've been learning from the Bootleg Fire based on the work of the Nature Conservancy, also working with the Klamath tribes down there, where they have really given us a wonderful picture of what is effective in those types of forests in the both thinning and prescribed fire. What we've learned there is totally invaluable. Out of a tragic thing, we've got some really strong evidence of what works and how well it works. So with that, just want to ask board members at this point, do you have any opening comments that you'd like to provide before we move on to the public comment section? Okay, hearing none,
Jim, I've got one.
Oh, sorry.
That's okay.
Go ahead, Carla.
I think your point is really well taken on that New York Times article and what the Nature Conservancy pointed out. I think it would be worth having them come before the board. It was pretty dramatic and pretty informational to me on how well those stands did that were thinned and had some prescribed burn as opposed to those that weren't. And I just think there's a huge educational piece there for all of us. And I think that would be great to invite them in front of the board and tell us what they did.
Yes, I totally agree, Carla. That's true. I think there've been a lot of people emailing back and forth some of those pictures and all, and I'm really glad it's in the New York Times, but yeah, we all need to be taking these lessons to heart. Okay, any other board member comments? All right, with that, we will move on. Thank you for those who signed up to provide testimony to the board today. We ask that everyone in the Zoom queue not exceed their allotted time of 3 minutes. I ask that before you start, you state your full name, the topic you are commenting on, and any associated affiliation if you are representing a group or organization. A timer will be provided to track your time, and each commenter will be called on by the board administrator. With limited time available, anyone who exceeds their time will be prompted to provide a closing statement and muted. Hillary, are we ready to engage with the public comment?
Yes, Chair Kelly, we are ready to begin. For the record, my name is Hillary Olivos-Rude, board administrator. All right, everyone. We have four folks signed up for the Zoom queue to provide testimony today for item one. Thank you for those who are able to join us. To ensure we just stay on track, I'll list names in a set order and call on each of you to begin your testimony. You will be unmuted for your comment portion and muted upon conclusion of your comments. When you begin, a timer will be displayed. And when you see the timer run out, we just ask that you provide your closing statement. So for the order, we'll have Ms. Wilkinson first, Mr. Barnes second, Ms. Kamal third, Mr. Moyer fourth. So on deck, Ms. Wilkinson, please be ready. I will be sharing my screen with a timer. One moment. Ms. Wilkinson, begin, please.
Great, thank you. So for the record, my name is Laura Wilkinson. I'm the State Forest Policy Director with Hampton Lumber. I'd like to congratulate Board Member Apagua and State Forester Mukamoto on their recent appointments. We're looking forward to working with both of you and showing you around a Hampton sawmill very soon. There's two issues that I would like to highlight today. First is in regards to the state lands presentation at the November board meeting, specifically on the carbon metrics. The data showed that carbon stored in live trees on state forest land has been decreasing, while federal and even industrial land showed an increase. How can this possibly be when ODF's own stand level inventory has shown overall growth every year? Therefore, carbon stored in live trees must be increasing. If you plainly consider the fact that private forests over time harvest their proximate growth and have smaller buffers and set asides than public forests, then how can carbon storage be decreasing on state forests? This information was presented is not fully understood by the department. State forest issues, but especially the issues of carbon and climate change, are too important to use misconstrued or unsuitable data. The board and the public must have confidence in the data that is presented by the department. We have asked ODF for an explanation on the use of this particular data and for its accuracy, but have yet to receive an explanation. We encourage staff to prioritize providing the board and stakeholders answers to the questions that have been raised. Secondly, the draft FMP strategies that are out for public comment now give us some serious concerns. Two main issues are, one, the sheer number and detail of these strategies. There are over 20 goals and 138 strategies. No business, organization, or government agency can function, let alone achieve the desired outcomes, with this many goals and strategies. Of more concern is the balance of these strategies. Only six pertain to timber production and revenue, while the rest focus primarily on conservation. This is out of balance with GPV and unnecessary with the companion HCP. These strategies seem to be rewriting HCP prescriptions. What is the purpose of repeating prescriptive detail in strategies unless the intention is to expand protections beyond what is required under an HCP? What is also concerning is that financial viability of the State Forest Division is missing from the strategies. The FMP and the HCP cannot be so prescriptive that they jeopardize the ability of ODF to manage state forest lands. We will be submitting detailed comments to the board and ODF, and we hope that these strategies will be refined before they are presented to the board. Thank you.
Thank you. Up next, Mr. Barnes.
All right, Chair Kelly, State Forester Mukamoto, and members of the board, for the record, my name is Seth Barnes, and I'm the Director of Forest Policy at the Oregon Forest and Industries Council. I want to offer a sincere congratulations and welcome to the board and the department to both board member Liz Ekpoa, as well as State Forester Cal Mukamoto. This has been a year of change on so many fronts, and while we are still hoping for a return to more normalcy in public meeting spaces like this, we appreciate the effort of so many to keep communications open. On the private forestry accord front, work continues to finalize the language in what will surely be landmark legislation introduced in the February short session. While policy and legal experts wrangle with the language, foresters and landowners and department staff are already implementing expanded buffers for SSBT streams in the Siskiyou georegion, increased buffers for herbicide applications, and increased protection measures for drinking water, homes, and schools. These measures were the initial wave of the protections provided by the PFA through the passing of Senate Bill 1602. And just last month, ODF released, as State Forester Mukamoto referred to, the new Ferns notification system for helicopter herbicide applications. The Private Forest Division has been working hard to prepare this state-of-the-art, one-of-a-kind, real-time notification system that was just launched in December. As landowners, we once again appreciate all the hard work that has gone into preparing this system. Again, there's no other like it in the nation, so there's no blueprint to copy or follow here. As a reminder, responsible and judicial use of herbicide is critical to the survival of young trees and promotes healthy forest growth. These tools are used very sparingly in forestry, just 2 to 3 times every 40 to 60 years, to help young trees get established and outcompete fast-growing and often invasive species, such as blackberries and Scotch broom. These protections apply to all non-federal lands in the state, including state lands. This is a brand new system, complete with expanded protections as well as expanded communication tools. As landowners, we will work diligently to help ensure good implementation of the new system. It will take time to get used to all of these changes, and there's still so much more to come. But we're committed to the process and working together to ensure good compliance. Thank you for allowing the opportunity for comment this morning, and I'm happy to answer any questions.
Thank you. Up next, Ms. Kamal.
Morning, Chair Kelly and members of the Board of Forestry. For the record, my name is Dr. Srishti Kamal, and I'm the senior representative with Defenders of Wildlife. Defenders is a national wildlife conservation organization with over 33,000 members and supporters in Oregon. Thank you for the opportunity to provide general public comments in today's meeting. I'll be using my time to talk about the delay in specified resources site rules for marble murrelet. This particular topic also appears on page 72 of the materials provided to the board for this meeting. The original petition was submitted in 2016, and the final technical report was approved by the board in April 2019. Since then, the process has been stalled because of the pandemic. In-person meeting preference should not be a reason to delay a critical issue after witnessing everything go virtual in the last 2 years. The petition was intended to be implemented as an interim protection measure until HCPs were in place. Any further delay makes this effort meaningless. Resources from the public and stakeholders were also invested in this process. The expert review is a good example of that. Further delay makes all the information and data collected outdated. The longer we wait, the higher the chance that we might have to repeat some of the steps from the past as well. Additionally, staff capacity and time has been cited as a factor. So is the same staff person responsible for dealing with all imperiled species work? If so, this is a matter of concern as it signals the agency not prioritizing imperiled species conservation within forestry and forest management work. There should be a dedicated staff to deal with specified resources site as it affects many species and not just the murrelet. After the approval of the technical report by the board, the next steps is very simple. There are a limited subset of alternatives to choose from, and the agency has to work with stakeholders to decide on which alternative works best. It's not too much of an ask of staff time. And finally, private forest accord will increase workload, and we acknowledge that. But it is also going to be a long process of several years with legislative approvals, rulemakings, new budget requests for staff personnel, et cetera. Meanwhile, we've already delayed this work here for 2 years, while the murrelet continues to face several threats, including poor habitat management and climate change impacts. The marble murrelet was recently reclassified by Oregon Fish and Wildlife Commission from threatened to endangered under Oregon Endangered Species Act because of the uncertainties around its habitat and its poor resiliency to climate change. With increased protection under Oregon ESA, now is a prime opportunity to make provisions under ODF consistent and complementary to species conservation measures at ODFNW. This is our chance to make an intentional and comprehensive effort to prevent the murrelet from further edging towards extinction. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Last up is Mr. Moyer.
All right, good morning. I'm Charlie Moyer, District Forester for Roseburg Forest Products. I wanted to start the year off with a positive note and give you an update on our rehabilitation following the Labor Day fires of 2020, following up on State Forester Mokomoto's statements regarding fire rehab. In Douglas County, our major fire was the Archie Creek Fire, which burned over 131,000 acres on a variety of public and private land ownerships. Roseburg had damage to approximately 20,000 acres that I'm responsible for managing. Our company assisted with a complete and coordinated effort with our staff and our contractors to help build fire lines alongside the Douglas Forest Protection Association, as well as the various federal fire teams and other landowners. As district forester, I'm in charge of reforestation on company timberlands in the Dillard area, which includes the timberlands involved in the Archie Creek Fire. So we began our reforestation plan while we were working on the fire line. We were able to secure more space at some of the seedling nurseries we already grow trees with in Oregon and Washington. But unfortunately, Roseburg's recent experience with large fires, we're starting to become experts in recovery after these devastating fires. So on our lands within the Archie Creek Fire, we were able to begin reforestation in November of 2020 and continued through the 2021 planting season. We were able to plant 2,700 acres using over 800,000 seedlings. Our goal is to have our lands reforested by 2023. The planting cycle has already started again for this winter, and we've already planted an additional 1,600 acres with nearly 600,000 seedlings. My goal this year is to finish this planting season at the halfway point for our reforestation. So reforestation after fire is vital for quick stabilization of soils, protection of clean water, and restoration of vital habitat for fish and wildlife for decades to come. Reforestation also restarts the clock on carbon sequestration. And thank you for your time.
Thank you very much, testimony providers. We appreciate your participation and welcome to stay in the Zoom meeting for the remainder of the item. However, we just ask that you remain muted for the remainder of this item. Chair Kelly and members of the board, this concludes our public testimony portion.
Thank you, Hillary.